Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Oshrat Barel, our longtime Mevina on Israel who's returned to the land and joins us from there discussing the pandemic and other important subjects from Israel. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2Jewish.
Shalom. You know, we always want our country to be number one. And those of us who feel pride in our individual states want that too. But I don't think any of us wanted the United States of America to be the leading country in the world in coronavirus infections and deaths, or the state of Arizona to be leading the nation in rate of infection. It has been a very rough couple of weeks here indeed, after a rough month, and there is no indication that things are going to improve anytime soon. To give you some idea of just how bad things are here compared to the rest of the world, Israel is now moving towards a complete lockdown, horrified at the number of cases of COVID-19 it is experiencing right now. Israel has about 8.5 million people. It has about 700 new cases a day now. Arizona, in contrast, has about 7.25 million people, fewer than Israel. And this week, we had days with over 4,500 new cases. And Arizona doesn't have anywhere near the isolation or contact tracing or active medical preparation that Israel has in place. To put it in grim, unfortunately accurate terms, there have been a little over 500,000 deaths worldwide from coronavirus, COVID-19, and 130,000 of them have happened in America, our nation. A high first world country with the world's largest economy and what is supposed to be a state-of-the-art medical system and an effective, efficient, transparent, responsive government. America is a big country. We have about 330 million people. But the world, of course, is much bigger, almost 8 billion people. To be blunt, in America we have 4.25% of the world's population, but about 25% of the world's COVID-19 deaths. That is just awful. And the simple truth is, by acting earlier and much more decisively, we could have prevented a lot of the agony we are going through now. Partially relocking down various parts of the country, shutting down our economy in half measures and without any real conviction. Why am I taking valuable time here on 2Jewish to talk about what everybody's already talking about everywhere all the time? Because this is, quite frankly, a profoundly Jewish issue. The highest value in Judaism is pikuach nefesh, the protection of human life. In the hierarchy of principles in our tradition, it supersedes nearly everything, including religious observance, personal freedom, even loyalty. In our current pandemic, there is substantial evidence that the best ways to limit the spread of coronavirus are by wearing masks properly in any and every public space and by rigorously observing social distancing. Hand washing is also effective. But the best thing you can do to help stop the spread of this viral evil is to wear a mask whenever you go out in any public space. The most Jewish aspect of this is that you are protecting other people when you do this. It probably provides you some limited protection, but what it really does is show that you are a moral and decent human being, that you value the health of other people as you value your own health and life. That is, you are protecting human life, observing pikuach nefesh, the highest of all values. And my goodness, what a simple, easy, cheap way to prevent ending up dying on a ventilator, or God forbid, condemning other people to that brutal, isolated end. Non-surgical hospital-style masks are available online for pennies and can be sterilized in an oven easily for reuse. Cloth masks can be made out of a T-shirt. They work better than the ones you buy online and can be washed in a machine and used again and again. They cost, well, just about nothing. They are easy to wear properly, and they save lives. What more could you ask? I have heard the sad argument that wearing a mask infringes on our freedom. I must ask, our freedom to do what? Get other people sick? Potentially get ourselves sick? Keep this pandemic alive so it can destroy our economy for good? The Jewish thing to do is to wear a mask and keep distance from other people in public. Please do it. It might save your own life, but it more likely will help save another person's life. And the Talmud teaches us that one who saves a single human being has saved an entire world. My friends, we have a delightful return guest this morning, our own longtime Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. And so to play us in this morning for our guest from Israel, here's some of the prayer for the State of Israel, composed by cantor Saul Zim and sung by three tenor cantors, Netanel Hershtick, Yaakov Lemmer, and Ozzy Schwartz. was Avinu Shebashamayim, the prayer for the welfare of the state of Israel, sung by three cantors, Yaakov Lemmer, Netanel Hershtick, and Ozzy Schwartz. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, Oshrat Barel, our good friend and longtime Mevinah in Israel, joins us from her home in Israel, discussing what it's like to have experienced the pandemic there, exploring Israeli politics and life in Eretz Yisrael right now. Hear all about it when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events virtually this summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Dinah Road, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone in normal times whenever they come back. In these days of coronavirus Tzoras, join us Friday night on our Facebook page every Friday night. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A Tucson. We'll have services with full music by virtual experience weekly for the time being. Our Adult Education Academy classes are on Zoom. You can access that by emailing us at BeitSimchaTucson.org, rabbi at B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A Tucson.org. Synagogues at 2270 West Dinah Road, west of La Cholla, on the north side of Ina, at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property, not in the mall, but in our own building on the south side. For now, we're a fully functioning virtual congregation on Zoom and Facebook. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, which are going strong in the fall, bar and bat mitzvah classes, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses, all taught through Zoom. And, of course, our services on Facebook, go to www.beitbeitsimchatucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing synagogue in all of Arizona and the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish a good friend, Oshrat Barel, who was the representative of Israel here in Tucson for a long time and an important part of the Jewish community and has moved back to her beloved hometown in Israel and has been there through this entire coronavirus pandemic to Beit She'an. Boker Tov, welcome back to Too Jewish, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi. It's a pleasure to be back in this program. My first assignment as a shlicha was an interview with you. I hope you remember.
I do remember very well. And it was...
And I guess it's now the last one.
And yeah, well, now this is your last official shlichut effort. I don't know. It's hard to say. So tell us a little bit, you know, you've been in Israel throughout this whole pandemic crisis, the coronavirus. Overall, what has the experience been like? I know it's been strange for everybody in the world, but it's nice to get somebody directly involved.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, whatever I experienced, it's somewhat similar to what you experienced in Tucson. At the beginning, it was a lot of, help me again, what's the word for unclarity, you know, it was like...
Confusion.
Confusion, We were hysteric a little bit, you know, because we didn't know where it's going to go, you know, how far it's going to go, how long it will take. I'm not sure we know more now, but in a way, we as a human being, like, we adjusted to this situation, and we kind of were somewhat okay, not knowing what's going to happen next.
Gonna
go. Yeah, but it's but at the beginning it was like really weird because it was really a lockdown at some point.
It seemed to us from here that Israel was very proactive. They moved very quickly to quarantine people who were coming in from overseas. They locked down quicker and I think more authoritatively than we did here in America.
Yeah. You know the jokes about Israel. It's or yeah, beseder, it's all going to be all right. Or, you know, doing everything, you know, now, here and now. Nothing is for tomorrow.
Right.
Here and now, you know, they close the gates or they close the gates tonight. Whatever they did, like they bring the boys home from India, from Brazil. I don't know. Do you know that all of the airplanes, El Al airplanes?
Yeah, they flew lots of charter flights. You know, they brought all the backpackers back from Chile and Kathmandu and everywhere, right?
Yeah, before Pesach, it was beautiful. It was beautiful to see, you know, how so all happened like now. So everything was immediately when they locked down, when they started the restrictions. But also everything when now they decided to release, it's also everything is immediately. You know, there is not so much process as I wished it will.
There's not a lot of moderation to the way the Israeli society responds.
Yes, as I said, yeah.
So, I always wondered, you know, in Israel, everybody is so used to being out in the public space. People are very, you know, it's an emotional, warm country. People hug, people touch. But it must be very strange with things like social distancing.
Very, very, very weird. This point, and I think people, it will take very long, if at all, that people will go back to the times that, you know, you hug everyone in the street or in the super. No, I found myself, and you know, I love hug people and say, you know, hello with warm hug, but not anymore. Even, you know, even my mom, of course my mom, because of her age, I really, really try to hug her with my face to the other side, but definitely friends and other relatives, no hugs. And I think it's definitely not only me. And I think it will change a little bit the culture here.
Yeah, it's not going back to
to me like in 3 weeks then.
Yeah, maybe totally different. But I don't think so. I think this is a new normal. We will talk much more with our guest this morning, Oshrat Barel, visiting us from Israel. When we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's toojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, toojewishradio.com, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome back a randomly occurring feature of Too Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment, Haikus for Jews, koans of wisdom. No egg and no cream, just syrup, seltzer, and milk. The Zen of the egg cream. And, like a bonsai tree, your terrible posture at my dinner table. That was Zen Judaism, Haikus for Jews, two koans, koans of wisdom, here on Too Jewish. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we started talking last week about some really fascinating Jewish trips that you were leading that have now been postponed, and talked about when it's likely to open up to go to places like Dubrovnik and Georgia and some really fascinating places. Nobody's been able to travel recently, and it's not happening all that soon to most of those places. What can people do to find out more about Jewish life in all of these really extraordinary parts of the world?
Actually, there's two things I want to address. One is the question you just asked, and the other is, last week you said, as a shortcut, Jewish heritage tours. And I want to clarify for you and for your listeners that these are tours that are open to everybody. And generally speaking, somewhere between 20% and 50% of every group is not Jewish people.
Right.
And the focus of my trips is a combination of history, language, culture, obviously food and wine, or anybody who knows me. And if there's a place that has a particularly rich Jewish history, like Odessa or Kiev or Istanbul, then there's a component of strictly Jewish interest, but it's not so overwhelming that non-Jews have ever found the trip, to borrow from the name of your show, too Jewish.
Too Jewish, right. Yes, that's right.
That's a complaint I've never had. So in terms of where people can get a fix on Jewish heritage, you know, I think this time of being confined at home has caused a lot of people to spend more time than usual on their computers. And people have honed their skills in terms of searches for information, Google, YouTube, whatever. And for all these places that have such rich Jewish histories, there's an overwhelming amount of information available online. That being said, when people sign up for my trips, one of the things that they like, sometimes they find overwhelming, is I give a suggested reading list of both fiction and nonfiction, and sometimes even videotapes of like movies that are relevant. And people can do as much or as little preparation as they want. I feel like an experience has borne this out. It's a bias, but a bias confirmed by many trips. The more preparation somebody does, the more they get out of the trip. It's like you invest a little in advance to get much more return, because you already know the basics and you can look at things with an informed eye. You can ask questions with an informed mind, and you will see and experience more if you do the preparation. So anybody who ever comes on a trip with me knows that they get an overwhelming amount of stuff suggested to them, and it's obviously optional. It's in no sense required, and there's no exam on it, but people have learned to do, and some people prefer reading nonfiction. Some actually prefer reading fiction, and you can actually get a lot. I mean, to prepare for a trip to Kiev, there's almost nothing better you can do than to read The Fixer by Bernard Malamud.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful book, and it really,
it's a great book,
helps people understand the Jewish history of Kiev.
Fascinating. You know, I have to say, as a confirmed traveler myself, not now, but in the past, it's always been a habit of mine to not only prepare, but also to bring books along on the trip, because as you're reading, I don't know, about Prague and you're reading Kafka, or you're in Venice and reading Thomas Mann, It just changes your whole perspective. It enriches the whole experience. So it's a great thing to do. And even if you can't travel now, you can prepare for traveling in the future.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. This one borrowed from my friend, comedian Rabbi Bob Alper, a past guest of Too Jewish. Two friends, Moish and Abe, are talking. Moish says, I had one of the most exciting nights of my life last night. I went out on the town with my girlfriend and her twin. Abe says, that does sound great, but tell me, how could you tell them apart? And Moish says, well, her brother has a mustache. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Before coronavirus obsessed all of us completely, before the protest movement galvanized our attention, many of us were focused on internet news feeds and media reports of religious extremist violence and attempted violence. Two American synagogues were shot up by anti-Semites over the past 18 months, murdering 12 people. 2 years ago, mosques in New Zealand were brutally attacked and 51 people slaughtered just because they were Muslims praying. In Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday just last year, 250 people were massacred by radical Muslim terrorists trying to suppress Christianity. Iran seeks a nuclear bomb in the name of Islam. In Syria, religious minorities have been brutally annihilated during its unending civil war, and so on. So how does Judaism face the issue of religious violence in its own ranks? This week we read the Torah portion from the book of Numbers, named after a man called Pinchas, whose story really began at the end of last week's portion of Balak. The situation is familiar. For the umpteenth time, the people of Israel have disobeyed the Torah and worshipped other gods. This time, the apostasy reaches epidemic proportions. Dare I say pandemic proportions? Even the elite leadership of the people begins to sample the religious wares of the Midianites and Moabites. Finally, one of the princes of the people challenges the authority of Moses publicly by taking a sacred prostitute into his tent while the whole assembly watches. As Moses and the other elders stand by in shock, unable to respond to this chutzpahdik act, a young Kohen, a priest named Pinchas, steps forward. He kills the wayward prince and his consort with a spear, breaking the spell of this evil religious practice. For this act, he is rewarded by God. That seems to validate his violent vigilantism. But there is, of course, more to the story than meets the eye. For Pinchas' reward for killing this couple is a brit shalom, a covenant of peace. Neither he nor any of his descendants is ever again permitted to go to war or even carry a spear. He must minister to the needs of the tabernacle, the rituals of the altar and purification and sacrifice, and never engage in any more acts of violence. Pinchas has broken the Israelites' latest fascination with paganism, but never again will his level of religious violence be tolerated. It must instead be sublimated to serve the needs of the community. This is an ongoing lesson about the dangers of religious fanaticism. Judaism has always refused to countenance the kind of religious insanity that led to the Crusades or to jihad, or the Inquisition and its public burnings, or any kind of religious terrorism. In spite of the occasional anomaly, our religious fervor is not designed, never designed, to lead to violence. We are committed fervently and firmly to the same brit shalom, the covenant of peace, that God placed on Pinchas. Religious passion and fervor are essential elements of a truly spiritual life, but religious violence is immoral, not Jewish, and in Torah it is expressly forbidden. We must seek always to channel our fiercest dedication to the service of peace. We can pray that all other religious traditions will come to see it this way, too. This week, we pray that our own Jews remember this essential lesson as well. When we return on To Jewish, our good friend and delightful guest, Oshrat Barel, shares what we can learn from Israel's experience of coronavirus and its ongoing political sagas, and what it's like to be back home in Eretz Yisrael again after 5 years in America. Find out when we come back on To Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The world is a sadder place this week because a comedy legend has left the scene.
About 4 days ago, a plane landed at Idlewild Airport. The plane came from the Middle East, bearing a man who claims to be 2,000 years old. He spent the last 6 days at the Mayo Clinic. Sir, is it true that you are 2,000 years old?
Oh, boy. Yes.
You are too... It's hard to believe, sir, because in the history of man, nobody's ever lived more than 167 years, as the man from Peru would claim to be. But you claim to be 2,000.
Yes, I'll be... I'm not yet. I'll be 2,000 October 16th.
Yes. You will be 2,000... When were you born?
We didn't have formal... years and names and writing. We didn't know.
I see. And what?
Nobody kept time then. See, we didn't know. We didn't write. We just sat around. We pointed in the sky and we said, whoa, hot boy, you know?
That's all you said?
We didn't even know it was the sun. We thought...
You mean you really didn't know anything?
We didn't know anything. We were so dumb and stupid.
Sir.
We didn't know who was a lady.
But they were.
Hundreds of, they was with us. We didn't know who they were. We didn't know who was the ladies and who was fellas.
You thought it was they were just different type of
fellas.
Yes,
just stronger or smaller or softer. The softer ones, I think, were ladies all the time.
What? How did you find out they were ladies?
A cute fat guy could have mistaken him for a lady. You know? Soft and cute.
Who was the person who discovered the female?
Briney.
Carl Reiner, writer, producer, director, and actor, who was part of Sid Caesar's legendary team, who partnered with Mel Brooks on The 2,000-Year-Old Man and went on to create The Dick Van Dyke Show and direct hit films, has died. He was 98 years old. Carl Reiner, the father of filmmaker and actor Rob Reiner, was the winner of 9 Emmy Awards, including 5 for The Dick Van Dyke Show, as well as a Grammy and the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. His most popular films as a director included Oh God, starring George Burns back in 1977, The Jerk with Steve Martin, and All of Me with Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin. Rob Reiner said, "My dad passed away. As I write this, my heart is hurting. He was my guiding light." In his later years, Carl Reiner was an elder statesman of comedy, revered and respected for his versatility as a performer and multi-hyphenate. He was also adept at social media, maintaining a lively presence on Twitter up till the last day of his life. Carl Reiner was born in the Bronx, March 20th, 1922. His father was Irving, a watchmaker, and his mother, Bessie. Parents were Jewish immigrants, his dad from Austria, his mother from Romania. After serving in a military entertainment troupe through World War II, Reiner performed in several Broadway musicals and had the lead role in Call Me Mister. In 1950, he was cast by Max Liebman in Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows, appearing on air in skits while working alongside the writers like Mel Brooks and Neil Simon. Reiner later worked on Caesar's Hour with Brooks, Simon, Woody Allen, Larry Gilbart, and many other future comedy luminaries. Starting in 1960, Reiner teamed with Mel Brooks on the comedy duo On the Steve Allen Show. Their performances on TV and stage, including Reiner playing the straight man in The 2,000-Year-Old Man. Eventually, that routine expanded into a series of 5 comedy albums, and a 1975 animated TV special. The last album in the series won a Grammy. It's impossible to imagine anybody else besides Carl Reiner as the straight man for the wild and crazy improvisations of Mel Brooks.
Do you remember your Hebrew, sir?
Yes, I
would you
I think I remember it fluently.
Because I understand the modern Hebrew is different from the
Yes, it differs in some of the phonetic alliterations and patterns.
Yes.
Yes.
Can we hear an example of the ancient Hebrew?
The very ancient Hebrew is, hi there. Hello. Hello there, how are you? I'm all right, how are you?
That's English.
Oh, wait.
Do you remember any Hebrew?
Very little, I think. I don't think I remember it. I must have forgot a great deal of it.
I think you forgot it all, sir.
Maybe all, yes. Yeah. Maybe all. Yes. It's thousands of years since I needed it.
In 1959, Carl Reiner developed a TV pilot titled Head of the Family, based on his own personal and professional life. The network didn't like Reiner in the lead role. Maybe he was too Jewish. And so, in 1961, it was recast and retitled The Dick Van Dyke Show. It became an iconic series, making stars of lead actors Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore. In addition to writing many of the episodes, Reiner occasionally appeared as temperamental show host Alan Brady.
Where's Marge?
Oh, you looking for Marge?
Yes, where is she? I've been waiting for her 20 minutes. She should have been back from lunch. Place is going apart.
I don't know.
People walking in here. What do you want?
Well, nothing.
Is it anything to do with Mel?
Not exactly. Well, yeah. Mel, we would like to talk to you, Alan.
I don't want to listen to it. Good.
Well, now, look here, Alan.
What?
Now, look here, Alan. I just want 5 minutes of your time.
Will you stop arguing? We've got work to do. We'll be here all night. Now, go get the sandwiches.
Are you trying to say I'm rehired?
I'm trying to avoid saying it'd make me sick. 4 corned beef sandwiches, 4 sodas. Now, hop, hop, hop.
Alan, not so fast.
What?
There's one thing I'd like to get clear.
Yes.
Alan?
Yes.
Do you want him on white bread or rye?
Rye bread. Corned beef on white bread? Corned beef on white bread? Where were you brought up? Okay. Where did you live? Sister's the same way. She puts mayonnaise. I can't live this way.
The series ran from 61 to 66, and Reiner started his directing during the show's run. In 66, he co-starred in the film The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, and then moved on to directing a series of comedy classics, including Where's Papa and Oh God. He played a big role in Steve Martin's career, directing him in 4 films, including The Jerk and All of Me. Reiner continued to appear in films and TV, including all 3 Ocean's 11, 12, and 13 remakes, wrote several books, and was a comedy star until the end. He and Mel Brooks remained close friends until the end. On the show, Comedians in Cars Having Coffee, he invited Jerry Seinfeld to come over any night to his house, since Mel Brooks always did for dinner, and then insisted on watching Jeopardy in a movie and falling asleep. Here's a final memory from the 2,000-year-old man. Carl Reiner only made it to 98 years, but that's not so bad.
Now, sir, did you ever have any formal job as we know it today?
Yeah, well, I was a manufacturer. I was an owner.
What kind of a factory did you have?
I had I used to make the Star of David, the Jewish stars. I was one of the first makers
of that. Oh, yes, the little thing you wear.
As soon as religion came in, I was one of the first in that. I figured this is a good thing.
Yes, and how did you make them? Did you have tools?
Well, we didn't have lathes. I employed 6 men, see, each with a point. And they used to run together in the middle of the factory. And in their great speeds, they would fuse the thing. And it would
thus
make,
making a star.
Yes, we would make 2 a day because of the many accidents. We have 6 men running at high speed with points. You know, plenty of accidents.
You never thought of going into anything else?
No, I had an offer once.
What
was it? A fella came to me, Simon.
What did Simon ask you to do?
He said, if you have a new thing, a new item, a winner, it looks like a winning item that is going to be a big seller, it's called a cross. And I looked at it and I turned it over and I looked in all sides of it and I said, it's simple. It's too simple. I didn't know then it was eloquent.
You mean you...
No, I didn't know it would be such a hit.
You turned him down.
And I said, I'm sorry, but I'm too busy. See, I could have fired four men. Two men run together, bang, you got a quote. See, I could have saved. I would have had over $100 today if I went in Brussels, because they're in everywhere.
In other news, Israel's regulator has ordered an evangelical Christian broadcaster's news channel off the air, saying it applied to serve a Christian audience, but instead seeks to convert Jews to Christianity. The Cable and Satellite Broadcasting Council said its chairman, Asher Biton, told the Israeli cable provider HOT that evangelical broadcaster God TV's channel Shelanu, ours in Hebrew, must come off the air. An examination of the council's supervision wing shows the channel does not appeal to the Christian population in Israel, but rather to Jews. Therefore, the characterization of the channel submitted for approval does not reflect its broadcasts. The spokesman for Shelanu, a guy named Ron Cantor, Israel regional director for God TV, said it was false the broadcaster broke its agreement. Our license, granted by the State of Israel, says in Hebrew, our target audience is the audience of Israeli viewers. There is no stipulation whatsoever. We must target Christians. Hot said it was cooperating with the council and would act in accordance with its decision nonetheless. Shelanu went on the air in April. It's part of God TV, a UK-registered evangelical Christian media company that says it broadcasts to about 300 million homes around the globe. Its international broadcasting licenses are held by a Florida-based nonprofit. Cantor said Shelanu was part of the evangelical God TV, but it was a messianic Jewish channel. Messianic Jews sort of follow Jewish law, but believe Jesus is Messiah, a central tenet of Christianity, of course. All serious Jewish denominations reject Messianic Judaism, quote-unquote, as a form of Christianity. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back our guest, Oshrat Bar-El, who is here visiting us from Beit Shean. She was the Shlicha for Israel in our community in Tucson for a number of years. You're not supposed to have favorites. All of the Shlichim are my favorite, but Oshrat was par excellence, beyond compare, wonderful part of our community for a long time. Oshrat, you're in Beit Shean. So Beit Shean is not Tel Aviv, it's not Jerusalem, it's not Haifa. It's sort of in the periphery of Israel. What was it like going back to, you know, your hometown, having lived in America for quite a long time?
Actually, this was the question I was asked, and I'm still being asked, you know, almost on a daily basis, you know, how is to come back from America to Beit Shean? People think that all of America is kind of what you see in the movies, and it's like New York and Manhattan. First of all, it's not. But the most important part of my answer is that that's what I was missing, you know, to be back, you know, close to my mom and my family. And the part that I missed all these years and now I miss in Tucson is the people. I miss my friends and my family, and it's beautiful to be back here. And I live in a beautiful apartment with the gorgeous view. I need to send you some pictures.
Yes, you do.
And I miss the people of Tucson. The part that I miss the most is the people of Tucson.
Well, we miss you too. But I have to say, everybody could understand you're wanting to go home. You went back to Israel frequently when you were here, but what did you find had changed the most in Israel? Not including, of course, this whole COVID-19, this coronavirus situation?
I think mostly it's my perspective. I don't think, a little bit more roads, more cars on the road, more buildings, but it's more my perspective that changed. Everything that I see, I have I'm not saying in a judgmental way, but I have things to compare to. I mean, things to some time to compare and hope to improve it, or just a different perspective. I wanted to give you one example. For instance, of course I know schools in Israel and schools in Beit Shean. I grew up here, But when I took my Shira to school here, and she said, "Mama, like, how come there is no tefillah here?"
Yeah, they're not. There's no prayer in school. What's wrong?
There's no tefillah. Yeah, I mean, like, I miss my tefillah, and I miss tefillah the way, you know, they used to learn it in Tucson. So all kind of things that I say, how come, like, here in a Jewish state, we don't have it, even in a not in a super religious way, just in a way that connects kids to their heritage, not even religion as a religion. And I'm surprised now, you know, how far schools, and I mean not a religious school, because we have like public schools here, you know, the majority is public schools.
Sure, the chiloni, the non-religious track schools, of course.
No, I mean all the datiim and the chilonim,
yep.
There is public schools, some of them are religious, some of them are secular. But the secular, you know, you have Tanakh, no, you know, but
right, they're studying Hebrew Bible, but there's no prayer at all, right?
Do you know what I say? They took the main actor out.
Yeah, yeah. They took God out of the program here.
So yeah, and of course I was familiar with it before I went on Shlichut, but now like I notice it more because I used to see like how things are being differently. I mean, in a very, very, I can't say secular on things that in Tucson, but the Mesorati or Reform movements are more, let me use, relaxed than the Orthodox movement here in Israel.
Sure.
That's what I hope, that we can see something like that more common in all the schools.
This is
something that's really...
We hope so too. We definitely hope so too.
More the perspective.
So I have to ask you. You know, Israel went through.
By the way, Rabbi, can I say something?
Of course.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to use my English. I didn't use it for 6 months. So sorry if it's rusty.
It's not bad. It's funny. I should have someone do this for me in Hebrew because my conversation on Hebrew has gotten so rusty altogether. Israel went through the craziest political time over the past year, in which there were multiple elections and for the Knesset. And from our perspective, it looked like, you know, there was never going to be an official government. What did it feel like being in Israel while you had to keep going back to the polls to try to elect a government?
Listen, first of all, when I said it was weird period of time, it was weird not just because of the coronavirus. It was weird because of the combination, the political situation, and the way that Israeli politician and, of course, prime minister handled all this. Everything was like everything that he said or every decision by the former, I would say, government, because we have new one now. Like everything, they lost the trust of our trust in general. They lost our trust because we felt that every decision was damaged by a political, it was affected by a political consideration of Bibi Netanyahu and others. And it was, that's why it was so weird, and it was weird. And when I took Shira to the third election, I said, no time, it's not time for celebration. I guess we're gonna go again very soon.
Yeah, it sure felt like there's gonna be another election.
It was crazy.
Such a crazy thing. Is there general relief in Israel about the political situation? Like, okay, it's done, we're moving on?
It's a combination of relief and disappointment. It's a combination of so many emotions, Rabbi. Because on one hand, yes, we're happy that finally we have, after more than 500 days, we have a functioning government, thank God. Definitely 500 days, it's crazy. On the other hand, you know, it's so clear now that we don't have like a trustworthy leaders in Israel. I mean, even Gantz, that I thought like, oh my God, finally we have someone we can someone who comes with clean
hands. Yep.
Yeah, finally someone who, like, in terms of moral, I can look, I and my kids and other can look up to him as a leader and say and trust him. And I can understand his decision, but it's a disappointment, on the other hand.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of disappointment that he went into the government with Netanyahu. I think it was equally mixed with relief that it was all over and now there was finally a government. But I also look back in history at every one of these shared agreements where they're supposed to rotate the prime ministership, they never do. So we'll see in 18 months or whatever it is, whether they call another election or something else. Chas v'chalila. Yes, absolutely. You know, Israel, it seems to me, has kind of weathered the economic storms up till now in a smoother way than even the United States. That the economy has been strong, it's been continuing. Obviously, the coronavirus is quite a shock. Are people worried that the economy won't come back?
It's, you know, you will hear two voices. By the way, people here think that, you know, the United States dealt with the economic situation better than the Israelis. So it's funny. Yeah, I mean, the fact that businesses, small and medium businesses got, you know...
The stimulus checks that came. Yeah, and the payroll checks, right?
Yeah, so they thought this was like a... This was better in the United States.
I'll ask one final question. You know, there's a lot of talk that the Israeli government, Netanyahu, is going to try to annex the West Bank this summer because he got a kind of a go-ahead from the U.S. What are Israelis saying about that?
To be honest, this is one of so many issues that was... you know, on the table lately, and I don't think it got the time and
the attention. Nobody's paying attention.
The attention.
Yeah.
No, it didn't get the attention. I think when it will be, and when it will be closer, you know, the Israelis, they are waiting for the last minute.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, 2 weeks before it will be Barak gone and protest and. People are waiting. No, it won't happen. It won't happen until it will happen. And I think here it's the same. Like, there is a controversy. Definitely we are divided. You know, definitely we are divided. I'm sorry that most of my answers are two voices. Because
no, but I think that's accurate. I think, you know, look, any real free, open, democratic society, there's going to be different perspectives. And, you know, the thing about Israel is two Jews, three opinions, and four newspapers to argue about it. I think that's pretty accurate. Oshrat, thank you for a wonderful visit on Two Jewish. Can we call you again the next time something interesting happens in Israel, which is all the time?
I hope good one.
Yeah, next time it'll be for
any time, Rabbi.
Listen, stay healthy. My love to you and to Ellie and to the kids. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Back to you and your family.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the Soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here on Two Jewish This Morning with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout today is the Prayer for Healing. Lisa Levine singing her Misha Berach for those struggling with coronavirus. Join us next Sunday on Two Jewish. Our guest will be Esther Lutenberg, author, publisher, and mental health advocate, talking about suicide prevention. My friends, may you have a healthy week. God willing, a Shavua Tov, good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Mi Shabbatach Avotenu Avraham Yitzchak Veya
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.